GamerNode.com presents episode 4 of the
Big Man Rant.
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 Welcome to episode 4 of the Big Man Rant, presented by GamerNode.com. This is your associate editor, Jason Finelli, checking in once again after, I think, 2 or 3 months since the last time I posted a rant. Could be longer than that, but I'm not sure. It's been a crazy time for me. Haven't been around the site as much as I would like to be, but in due time. I'd like to start off by announcing, officially, for those who don't know, or for those who care, that I am engaged. I'm sorry, ladies, I am no longer on the market. I proposed on Christmas Eve to my lovely now fiance of 6 years, Stephanie. There is a YouTube video of said proposal that you can watch and fawn over if you wish. Easily the best decision I've ever made, because she is the best girl out there for me. It really helps, especially for a gamer like me. It helps to have someone who allows you to be that gamer. I've heard of many stories of guys who got a girlfriend who didn't like video games, so they stopped playing, or, you know, that kind of thing. Stephanie is not like that. Hell, she played Halo with me, and I thought I was going to pass out from the sheer joy of her actually playing Halo with me. The only problem was she's not very, I don't want to say coordinated, but she wasn't very good at moving the joystick, for moving, like, the character, and for moving the sight of the character. So if I would sneak up on her and shoot one gun, she'd immediately freak out and start spinning around in circles. It really was funny to watch. But, yeah, so that's why, this time has been so nuts for me. Starting to planning that whole thing. There will be an extravaganza, I'm sure, and GamerNode will be there in force. Not that it's game-related, but who knows? Maybe it will be. That'd be sweet, wouldn't it? A video game-themed wedding? Honey, if you're listening, no, that'll never happen. A buddy of mine was like, you're a Marvel vs. Capcom fan. How about a Marvel vs. Capcom-themed wedding? And I said, I don't think that the phrase, over her dead body, could really summarize how unlikely that is, because it's highly, highly, highly unlikely. But, oh, we'll see. All I know is I'm locked up forever, and that's the way I want to be. But enough about that. You are here to hear about video games. You are not here to hear me gush about my engagement. So let's get to it. This is Big Man Rant number 4. Big Man Rant number 4 is titled, My Most Anticipated of 2011, Not Named Marvel vs. Capcom 3. I've made it abundantly clear on GamerNode that I am a fan of Marvel vs. Capcom 3. And now that it's 5.5 weeks away as of this recording, it's getting to a fever pitch. However, there are other games coming out in 2011. Other games with a lot of clout. Other games that really deserve to be talked about and talked extensively about. So, without further ado, here are my most anticipated games of 2011, not named Marvel vs. Capcom 3. I'm listing them in alphabetical order, because I don't want to start that whole, you know, nerd rage nonsense, this game's not better than this game. So I'm being safe, and I'm going alphabetical order for my anticipated 2011 releases. First off, I'd like to start with the honorable mention. When I first planned this, I got about 25 or 30 games in a list, took 10 out, and then left the rest to be honorable mentions. So these are the ones that did not make the cut. Ace Attorney Investigations 2, Batman Arkham City, Beyond Good and Evil HD, Bulletstorm, Deus Ex Human Revolution, Dissidia 2, I'm not saying the real title because I don't think I quite know it, Ghost Trick Phantom Detective, Homefront, The Ico and Shadow of the Colossus Collection, Little Big Planet 2, Metal Gear Solid Rising, Okamiden, Tactics Ogre, Two Worlds 2, WWE All-Stars, and the remake of You Don't Know Jack. Now, that's quite a list of games that did not make the cut. Arkham City being a notable absence from that. However, this year is just stacked. So, number one is Elder Scrolls V Skyrim. Elder Scrolls, now, I have to admit, Bethesda RPGs don't sit well with me. I liked Oblivion, I liked Fallout, but I wasn't as batshit crazy about it as everybody else was. I'm hoping Skyrim can change that. I want something that, like, Elder Scrolls Oblivion set the tone, and then Fallout took that formula and put it into a different world with guns, instead of, you know, fantasy weapons and magic. I want Skyrim to not be a adaptation, but an evolution. I want it to keep pushing their format of RPGs into a place where I can really enjoy it. Because I want to enjoy those games. I don't know what it is. I don't have 130 hours to devote to a game like that. It's too big. Much too big. Now, I'm not saying I want Skyrim to be a 20-hour game. I don't want that at all. But if it can be big, repetitive, or boring. I'm not honestly boring, but just walking from place to place with nothing going on and moving really slow. I mean, that's what fast travel is for, of course. But if you've never been there before, you can't fast travel, and it's very, 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 very slow. I don't like that. I like a little bit of pace in my games. I like a little bit of, you know, I don't want to be worried about having to go a place across the map that I've never been before and walking there to get there. I just want to be able to get there at a good pace, maybe ride a horse or something like that, which Oblivion had horses. So I guess that's okay. Hopefully they'll bring that back, but I would like to see it evolve the Bethesda format a little more, before I can really say that I'm going to be batshit crazy over it, but I want to be, so that's why it makes the cut. Number two, from Epic Games, Gears of War 3. Big Gears fan, but I'm one of the odd Gears fans who likes it for the story. Now, I know what you're thinking. Really? Gears? Storyline? Are you kidding me? I think that Gears has a little more depth in its story than other shooters. Call of Duty is the same old action movie. Halo is a bit contrived, but Gears, the whole Dominic Maria subplot, really got a lot more emotion out of me than, say, a Halo mission or the Call of Duty nuke. Just seeing the Dominic's emotion and his pain when he finds Maria was amazing. And if they can keep that type of storytelling going in the third one, now that the entire planet is almost in ruin, it really excites me. And the idea of the upgraded horde mode, where you can actually earn different stages of, like, Berserker you can finally be, and you can be the Crawler and stuff like that. What I saw at E3 of it was very, very impressive, and I'm hoping that they can keep that trend going, because I would love to play the game when it comes out. I would love it. Number three is Infamous 2. Now, Infamous is one of my favorite games on the PS3. It's the only game on either system that I have completely platinumed 100% achievement trophy, whatever you want to call it. It's the only game. The only game. Now, I played it that much. I played it two or three times. I love the story. I love the idea. I love the free roam. I love the powers. I loved everything about it. And I'm hoping that they can bring that same depth to the gameplay that they had in the first one. Now, I'm not saying... Well, here's what I would like. I don't want to go back to square one and lose all of my powers. I still want to be able to skate across the power lines at the very beginning. I want to be able to throw the grenades at the very beginning. I basically want Cole to be what he was when I finished the first one, and then evolve more. Now, in the previews, you do see the ice, so hopefully he'll start to bring in some other elements. That'd be great, like some wind or some ice or some fire, anything like that, not just lightning. But I also don't want it to be overcomplicated to the point where, in order to do a successful power attack, you have to hit like four or five different buttons and use four or five different elements, because that'll just get confusing. I don't want that. If they can keep the story, and the story is good too. The story, the ending of the first game was amazing. That was one of the coolest twists of the year. It'd be one of the coolest twists of this generation. The whole Kessler is you thing. Spoiler alert, sorry. But yeah, I mean, if they can keep what they did in the first one going in the second one, I see no reason why they can't be one of the most successful games of this year. And I'm definitely excited to play it.
Number four. Well, there is no number four. Because when I was recording this, I was so wrapped up in being engaged and planning weddings that I forgot how to count. Some husband, right? So you know what I deserve. Moving on.
Number five. Number five is The Last Guardian. Team Iko is now 2-for-2 with Iko and Shadow of the Colossus. Shadow of the Colossus was named the game of the decade by this here website last year. So hopefully that they can continue that brilliance and that success and that artsy-fartsy type of game development that we love so much into The Last Guardian with the giant dog rat bird. I'm interested to see if it's going to be a radically different style of gameplay. Shadow of the Colossus was 18 boss fights, so I guess that was definitely radically different. Iko was just puzzle solving in a giant castle. Not that much combat to it, but The Last Guardian, they're going to have to do something different. You can't just have 18 boss fights. You can't do that. Colossus already did it, and it's called The Last Guardian, not, you know, The First Guardian. I would also like to know if The Last Guardian maybe connects the three games. That would be interesting. If it ends up that they're a trilogy in the same story. Like if the protagonist from Iko and Wander from Shadow of the Colossus and this guy from Last Guardian are all connected somehow. That would be great. And a nice little twist at the end of what has been a great series of games for Team Iko. So Last Guardian definitely ranks up there. Not to mention it looks beautiful from what we've seen so far. The only problem I have with that, with Last Guardian, is for some reason I have a feeling it might not make this year. It might be early 2012, like January, February. Here's hoping I'm wrong, because I really want to play it. Team Iko, please get it out. Get it out. Get it out. Number six. Number six is The Legend of Zelda Skyward Sword. Now, Josh Robinson, fellow staff writer here at GameAndNode.com, made Legend of Zelda his number one game you must play in 2011. And that's a bit of point of contention here at GamerNode. At E3, the five of us went to E3. All five of us played Zelda. And we were quite divided in our opinion. I went apeshit over it. I thought it played great. I thought it looked great. I was blown away. I know Dan Crabtree was a little underwhelmed. He said there was a lot of work that needed to be done, which I agreed with. There was stuff that needed to be done, but it was a great foundation. Murphy liked it. Eddie liked it. But everyone said that there was a lot that had to be improved. And, of course, Miyamoto showing on the stage last year at E3 did not help. But I feel that that's something that Josh Robinson said is very true. Never, ever, unless you remember the CDI, never has a Zelda game been bad. If there's any series in this gaming world that has a great track record of being an excellent game every single time one releases, it's Zelda. So I don't think any of us have anything to fear as far as Link is concerned. He's going to come out with a great adventure. We're all going to love it. And it's definitely something that will need to be played in this coming year. Number seven. If I did rank these games, number seven here might have been number one. If I didn't go alphabetical order, this one would have been number one. And that is Mass Effect 3. I've made no bones about my Mass Effect insanity. I am a rabid fan through and through. The story, the gameplay, the everything. Everything about Mass Effect 2 was fantastic. The ability to carry your game over from 1 to 2 and all the little things. Like one thing that always amazed me was in the very first game, you go to Cora's Den in the Citadel and you deal with a guy named Fist. He's the head of the bar and he's a gangster, douchebag, whatever. And if you let him live, you don't think anything of it. Oh, you let him live, you walked away, whatever. But then in Mass Effect 2, you get to Omega. And while you're in Omega, Fist confronts you, drunk as a skunk, of course. He can't do anything to you because he's obliterated. But he's there. The fact that he's even there shows the kind of continuity that BioWare can create throughout three games. 1, 2, 3, boom. It's fantastic. And how many games are out there, if any, that remember what you did in the previous installments besides the normal story stuff? It kind of reminds me of how amazed I was with Metal Gear Solid 1 when it told me what was on my memory card in Psycho Mantis Battle. It's that to a much, much, much grander scale. The ability to adapt your save file from a previous game and just put it into a whole new title and a whole new adventure, carrying over your choices and everything else, is incredible. I can't wait to see what kind of story changes they make for this game. The trailer with the Reapers attacking London and that gentleman sniping out of Big Ben was incredible. I know, I'm sitting at the VGAs and watching it in the press room with all the press there, and the cheers that were heard and everything like that. I think it got more of a reaction than Elder Scrolls V, but if it wasn't more, it was definitely equal. It's a game that I know that once Marvel Cap comes out and I get it out of my system and I play it for a while and I start to calm down with my Marvel Cap 3 nonsense, I know that I'm immediately going to go Mass Effect 3 and go right into Mass Effect 3 mode. Checking that, seeing everything there is to see, and then when Mass Effect 3 comes out, I'll be a recluse again. And I'll play... I remember I beat Mass Effect 2 in a week the first time, just because I wanted to get through the story, and then I immediately played it again to get through all of the side quests and stuff like that. I loved it. And if I love Mass Effect 3 half as much as I love Mass Effect 2, then it will be a resounding success. So here's to hoping. Now, number 8. I did say this was a podcast of games not named Marvel vs. Capcom 3, but I did not say that they were not fighting games. So number 8, Mortal Kombat. Mortal Kombat, back in the day, there was always the Street Fighter Mortal Kombat fight, and I was one of the people who was on both sides of the line, just depending on what I felt like playing that day. If you held a gun to my head and said, pick an allegiance, it would be Street Fighter, but Mortal Kombat was always, always fun with the friends. You know, the bloody, gory, over the top, you know, send a guy into the pit, kill him with spikes, set him on fire, that kind of thing. It was fun. It was good, gory fun. But Mortal Kombat started to get away from it. Deadly Alliance was not good. Deception was better. Armageddon, the whole create your own fatality system, did not work as well as they would hope. But the creative character was cool. But Mortal Kombat versus DC was basically Mortal Kombat without the Mortal Kombat. There was no blood, no guts, no gore. The one fatality that was really awesome, the Joker, they censored. So it kind of took all those fans of Mortal Kombat and were like, hey, what about us? What about the people that have been around forever? Yeah, you put superheroes in the game, that's all well and good, but you took away the best parts. What's the matter with you? And that made a lot of people angry. That made a lot of fans angry. So the Mortal Kombat people listened. It's almost as if Warner Brothers buying Midway was the best thing to ever happen to Mortal Kombat, because they immediately decided to reboot. They're going back to the bloody, gory mess that it used to be. Some of the fatalities I've seen from this game are ridiculous. Kung Lao's hat comes to mind. If you haven't seen that on YouTube, check it out. It's incredible. And the recently announced inclusion of Kratos in the PS3 version is interesting. It would almost be surreal to see Kratos lit on fire by Scorpion, or chopped in half by Kung Lao's hat, or something like that. It's almost as if it shouldn't happen. But it will, and it will be awesome. So Mortal Kombat at number 8 needs to be played. You get information about it every other week, almost. Wait for it. It's going to be awesome. Come April, March, whenever it comes out, definitely something to look forward to. Number 9 harkens back to a time of innocence in games that I've been playing since I was a kid. It's the next evolution in the Pokemon series, Pokemon Black and White. The more I see about this game, the more I get interested. And not so much because, you know, it's Pokemon, it's a formula that's worked for years, but it's almost as if they want to reintroduce it to the next group of children. And I get that from the decision of, you don't see any Pokemon from previous installments until after you finish Black and White. So you won't see, you know, Pikachu or any of the older guys that I grew up with, any of the original 150, anything at all, until after Black and White's Elite Four are defeated and the game is over. I love that decision, because it forces you to accept new Pokemon and new moves and new ideas from this game, before you can go back to your comfort zone. I like that because in Sapphire and Ruby and Diamond and Pearl too, yeah, the new guys were there and they were interesting, but I always found myself going back to the original 150 or the 251. There weren't many Diamond, Pearl, and Platinum Pokemon that I was really, really, really interested in, with the exception of maybe Lucario or the third evolution of some of the original 150 that didn't have an evolution or didn't have a second evolution, like Lickitung or like Licky Licky instead of Lickitung, or Electivire for Electabuzz, stuff like that. It didn't really interest me other than those guys. So to see Nintendo deciding, okay, look, you want to get to the ones you know and love? At least try out the new ones first, and then we'll come back to see how you feel. I love that. I think it's a great idea, and it's definitely a way to keep Pokemon fresh, as opposed to, you know, what the graphical updates and stuff like that they're making. It keeps the veteran players on their toes, and it allows the new players to come in and pick a favorite before they see the old favorites, before they go back and relive all the old guys in the new game. So it's definitely something, it's definitely a decision that I like, and I hope works out. But regardless, Pokemon Black and White, easily one of the top 10 games of the year to anticipate, just because it's Pokemon. You've been playing it for years, the same formula has worked every time it's come out, and we all love it, we're all going to love it. So Pokemon Black and White, number 9 on the list. And then number 10. Number 10 is only number 10 because it starts with you. On most people's lists, unless you're Josh, it's 1 or 2. Uncharted 3, Drake's Deception. A lot of this comes from track record. Uncharted 2, 35 Game of the Year awards, can't be wrong. Uncharted 1, easily one of the best games on the PS3 in its early stages. Uncharted 3 is taking a lot of new challenges. Sand being one of them. It's always been said that the two hardest things to animate in gaming are sand and water. Water, they've done really well with. From the first game and the parts you were rewarded in the second game, the water looks great. Now it's time for sand. Let's see what they can do with the always, like, the flowing nature of sand. Like, I wonder if there'll be, you know, hourglasses or stuff like that, just to show how they animate the sand before you actually go into the desert, so you know what you're expecting. And of course, it wouldn't be Uncharted without Nathan Drake and the voice of Nolan North giving personality to the character. I don't think a character has ever really benefited from having an excellent voice actor quite like Nathan Drake does. Because at first, when he first was announced, he was going to be like the male Tomb Raider. He was going to be this, you know, brave, macho guy who no one really, you know, would be another contrived, normal, over-manly character. But Nolan North brought a everyman, like a normal Joe type of approach to the character. And I think that really created more appeal than just his game, like the game itself. Because think if Nathan Drake were voiced by someone else, and he wasn't the, you know, cracking jokes at every turn, or you know, you couldn't hear the actual emotion in his voice. He was just another video game character who was overconfident, overzealous, and boisterous to a fault. I don't think Uncharted does as well, if not for that. I don't know why. I have a feeling that I think Uncharted's personality is one of the most important parts of the game. Yes, it's graphically impressive. Yes, the soundtrack is amazing. Yes, the gameplay, the platforming is fantastic, and the combat's easy to get into too. But without that personality, that edge to it, where Nathan's talking to Elena Fisher, or when Chloe is there, I don't know that Uncharted is anything else than a glorified Tomb Raider without that personality. So, but regardless of what you think, you could play the game muted, and it'll probably be fantastic. It's Uncharted. The first two games were fantastic. The third one will probably be just as good, if not better. And it really will make a fitting ending to what could very well be one of the best years in gaming. Of course, I've been saying that for 3 years now. But 2011 just seems stacked. It seems like every month there's at least one crazy, crazy title coming out that we all need to play. And the holiday season is going to be a wallet breaker again with Skyrim and Uncharted and Mass Effect and Gears and all that other stuff. However, there is one thing I would also like to talk about. It's not a game, but it is coming out this year. And I believe it needs to be mentioned. It needs to be mentioned because it could change. It'll definitely dominate the market, but it could change the way we play games. And that is the 3DS, Nintendo 3DS. 3D is, you know, come or take it or leave it. You like 3D, you don't like 3D. I like 3D without glasses. I like to be able to see the 3D without having to wear some kind of glasses or stupid, you know, thing on my face to enjoy it. I also like the idea that if your eyes start to strain and you can't handle it, just turn it off. Just turn off the 3D and everything will be fine. I love that. I love that idea. That, I think, is one of the most appealing things about the 3DS. Because without that, people who can't handle the 3D or people who have bad eyes or whatever, they wouldn't enjoy it. They wouldn't be able to enjoy the game, or the device. Also, the lineup of games that is coming out for it are surreal. You got Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time Remake, amazing. New Kid Icarus, people have been asking for years. Mega Man Legends 3, Professor Layton versus Ace Attorney. Super Street Fighter 4 on the 3DS. The list goes on and on and on and on. It's going to be one of the most, I think, one of the best-selling items of 2011. It's going to completely take the portable market by storm. iPhone is going to be, you know, a distant past. They talk about iPhone taking the portable market for casual gamers. I think the 3DS is going to trounce it. And I don't know. I think Nintendo has the right idea. Having played it, having held it, having looked at it, I think Nintendo has the right idea as far as the 3DS is concerned. So that was my most anticipated of 2011, not named Marvel vs. Capcom 3. Thank you for listening to the Big Man Rant. My name is Jason Finelli. I'm the associate editor at GamerNode.com. Until next time, keep playing.